Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Science to Suits. We are in our ongoing series of walking through the basics of life science entrepreneurship with a focus on student founders. Today, we discuss resources available for early stage startups at universities. And we welcome our guest for today, Bhavana Mohanraj. Bhavana, would you mind providing an overview of your background?
Sure. Jarek and Daniel, thanks so much for inviting me onto this podcast today. I'm really excited to share what Penn is doing to support student founders. So my background is also based in the Penn community. I did my PhD in the McKay Orthopedic Research Labs with Rob Mock and George Dodge, focused on cartilage tissue engineering and drug delivery systems. I then went on to work at a medical device startup called BioRes. And I was there for a year and a half as the director of R&D, developing regenerative implants for tendon and ligament injuries. But I missed Philly far too much. So I came back to Penn and I joined the PCI Ventures team and have been with that team for about a little over 2 years, now working with the life sciences portfolio of companies across medical devices, diagnostics, and therapeutics.
Great. Thanks, Bhavana. And so looking at your background and also your time in grad school, you were involved in actually co-founding, spinning out a company from your PhD research. Can you speak a little bit about your experiences in that?
Sure. So the company was called and is called Mechanotherapeutics. And that company started, I think, because there was a shared interest in entrepreneurship that my advisors were supportive of and willing to sort of explore that venture piece with me. So we started the company through one of the company formation programs that PCI Ventures now offers. Still, it's called Upstart, and I'll tell you a little bit more about that in a few, but I worked with my now colleague, Mike Dishowitz, to start that company. So I feel like it's come full circle. And when we started to think about the company formation, I don't remember if we started the company before or after, but we participated in the Penn iCorp program. And so that is a fantastic resource for if you're thinking about commercialization and you have an idea and a technology to explore this other piece of the world that you don't really see in academia, which is looking at who your customers are, looking at what their needs are, what's the problem that you're solving for them. It's just a mental shift in how you think about technology and product development versus hypothesis testing and exploration that is more typical of our research and development in an academic setting.
So Bhavana, you touched briefly on PCI Ventures in its early form. Can you maybe give us an idea at a high level of what the role of PCI Ventures is within PCI and how all that works in our ecosystem here?
Sure. So PCI Ventures is part of the larger Penn Center for Innovation. And as a whole, that group supports commercialization across the university from the point where you're disclosing a technology to the licensing group to and through the patent process. And then licensing to external companies. Where we fit in is we're sort of this homegrown new company formation mechanism for spinouts from Penn. And so we work with faculty and staff and clinicians to build companies based on Penn IP, based on the innovation coming out of their lab. So we provide a number of resources to help this occur, help foster innovation in these spinouts. We work through our company formation programs called Upstart and Up Advisors. We have a mentors in residence group. So these are former entrepreneurs themselves or investors or actively in both of those spaces. And they're willing to donate their time and their guidance to our portfolio as well. We work with our programming manager, Jamie Sweet, to offer educational opportunities to the portfolio as well as with our professional network of services. So there's a lot of operational pieces to building a company, and those companies are willing to work with our portfolio to help them get started. And then of course, we work with amazing student groups to be able to provide support in terms of looking at the market landscape, looking at the commercial potential of the product. And so I think what's really important to realize is there's this technology piece that's at the core of building a company, but then there's all of this support structure that needs to exist to actually make the argument that this is a commercializable technology and then execute on that vision.
Very much the one-stop shop.
We try.
Cool.
How do spinouts then from Technologies at Penn, how do they decide whether or not to work with PCI Ventures and go through this one-stop shop for all these programs? And on the flip side, do PCI Ventures, do you decide on which spinouts you would want to work with?
So we have two company formation programs, like I mentioned, right? So Upstart and UpAdvisors. Upstart is our hands-on program. So we work very closely with the founders to start the company, to recruit the team. Often the first person we recruit is the CEO. We'll help them actively develop the strategic plan and the fundraising targets. And then as the company progresses from week to week, where this is a high touch point model. So I'm meeting with my teams weekly, if not multiple times a week, to help drive them towards their goals. So if you haven't started a company before, if you want the help on the business development side, this is a good model for founders to choose. UpAdvisors is really as it sounds. It's an advisory program, an advisory model where we are a resource for the company, but the company itself is operating independently. And so founders at Penn can choose either of these models. They can also choose not to work with us at all. And that's okay, right? We want to remain a resource for the university sort of at all levels. And so our door is always open. And this is what we say, our door is always open. If you have questions, we don't want you to ever feel that if you didn't choose our programs, you can't talk to us, because that's not true at all. We remain as a resource. And to that point, we're going to be launching a new program called Venture Warmup. And this will be rolling out in the coming months. But the goal here is to work with faculty and researchers and students pre-company formation to better understand if there's an opportunity to commercialize that product and look at the interest from investors and other sources. So this is sort of a step before.
What I'm hearing is there's definitely a wealth of resources to support founders here at Penn at different stages, so that for this really potentially novel and risky adventure that they're taking on, that there is help. So for students with a licensed technology that came out of their research, what are some of the key considerations in deciding whether or not they should go the route of spinning out a company and to actually commit to that spin out?
That's a great question. So startups are inherently a risky proposition, right? And so some of this is really just a personal choice of looking at the risk profile of starting a company and whether or not you are comfortable with that. Graduating from Penn, from your program, you may be thinking there are certain things you want to do next. And startups are a great leadership opportunity. They're a great opportunity to learn and do a lot of different things, but that has to be your interest. And you have to be really driven, because startups entirely self-motivated. So when you're thinking about it, I think you have to really understand, is that something you truly want? If it is, then there are ways to be able to support yourself even before you get funding into your venture, right? Everyone needs to eat, everyone needs to pay rent. So one of the great resources out there is called the Small Business Program, or America's Seed Fund from the NIH, NSF, and other government agencies to support small businesses in this initial stage of assessing feasibility, their initial R&D processes. And so even as a trainee, still at the university, you can apply for these grants, let's say about a year before you're about to finish. And if you're awarded, you can ask for salary on those grants, right? So now you can be supported when you make that transition from the university into the startup full time. And this is a great way you can to be co-PI or PI on a grant, right? So you're taking that next step in your career, but also maintain your connection to the technology and all that work that you did as a student.
Kind of keeping with that theme or model, and I'm sure you have a wealth of experience in this. So I imagine many of these technology spinouts are a product of maybe potentially a grad student and a mentor. And what have you seen as far as the dynamic between a trainee and a mentor? Like, what has worked and what hasn't worked, just from your experience?
I think what really works well is if both the faculty and the student have that shared interest in entrepreneurship. And the faculty are going to be staying at Penn, right? They have built this lab. But if they're supportive of their student going out and taking this technology in a commercial direction, that works really well. And part of the, I think, advantage of that pairing is also you get breadth and depth. So your PI has this high level overview and understanding of all of the activities in his lab, as long as or in that research realm. And then you have the student who's learning all of that from the PI, but in the lab doing the work at the bench. So now you have this team who really understands the technology, understands the scope of the problem, and they can work together in a synergistic way.
Continuing along the lines of looking at it from the student founder perspective, then are there specific challenges that student founders encounter at these early stage of company formation? Especially, I'm assuming most student founders, they really come from a more technical and scientific background. And like you were mentioning, they could be still full-time in their training program.
Yeah, so I think it's important to take advantage and to learn all you can in your training program, right? In the academic environment where you have the freedom to do the work you need to in terms of your research and exploration. But there are some skills that you can develop in parallel that will translate really well into an industry setting, into a new venture at its early stages. The one that I always come back to is communication and communication skills. So on top of your scientific presentations and publications, public speaking in general and non-technical writing is really important, because you'll be able to use those skills to articulate the value of your technology and the vision of the company to those outside of your immediate scientific group, outside of the scientific community. So that's really one. And then the second is around strategic planning and documentation. And I know that sounds very unexciting, but I will say that someone told me, if you wrote up a summary of your experiments as soon as you were done with them in grad school, it would make writing papers and your thesis so much easier, right? How often do you actually do that? I don't actually know anyone other than that one person who gave me that advice. However, that all comes back to this need to document and to very carefully plan and then execute and record the outcomes of those experiments. And because in an industry setting, what this turns into are your standard operating procedures, document control, quality management. And so you're implementing some of the skills that will then translate into this process of actual product development.
Thanks, Bhavana. So my next question focuses more on the PCI Ventures role. And can you give us an understanding of how do you actually do the diligence on seeing if there's a viable market for a technology, or understanding what other potential competitors are out there to really make a strong value proposition to go forward with a startup?
This is a great question. And I think it really centers on understanding the specific problem you are solving, if customers recognize the same problem, and then if your solution is valued to them to solve that problem. And so one way that we know of and understand to answer questions is to look at the published literature, look at peer-reviewed papers and market reports, but you also have to really talk to your customers. And so I don't just mean the end users who you might consider patients or clinicians, but all of the stakeholders along that commercialization pathway. So for life sciences companies, of course, the products typically have some sort of reimbursement aspect to it. So who's paying for it? How is it reimbursed? How does it save money or time or quality of life? And then what benefit does it provide to the clinicians, to the patients, and to the hospital overall? And so this is just a lot of discussion. And this comes back to actually the Penn iCorp program. So their program really is centered on this customer discovery piece, and understanding the stakeholders and the value proposition for each of those stakeholders. And then that fits into the larger scope of once you have a CEO in place, it becomes, I would say, a lot easier for the team to be able to go out and do this research, to be able to talk to investors as well as the customers, because investors have insight across the sort of the spectrum, right? And in the particular realm or the problem you're trying to solve. So it's just sort of a lot of conversations to understand if there's a market, and then taking that information and building models to understand, okay, if what can we charge for this product? What's the total market size? And if that number is something that would appeal to investors or strategic partners down the line as you develop that product.
And is there like a typical timeline for that process, or is it a like a one-time deal, or do you have to do it every time you pivot with kind of a new indication, say, for your technology?
I wish I could say it's a one-time deal, but it's definitely an ongoing process. Pivots are very common, I think, because once you understand your market, you may think that's not the right opportunity, or that might not be even the right opportunity in terms of the financial reasons, but is that where you can compete, right? So how are you going to get into that space and be able to show value? And then where can you expand? So it's constantly evolving. And I can say I'm going through this with my portfolio companies, right? This is an ongoing discussion on a weekly basis. And then as you talk to investors, again, it might change a little bit, or you might find new information to strengthen your arguments.
Bhavana, hearing you talk about some of the approaches to assessing the market and whether there's a strong value proposition, these could sound like pretty foreign and potentially daunting topics for graduate students or trainees here. So I'm assuming that's where PCI Ventures come in and helping the students or trainees. But can you speak to overcoming and learning these skills here?
Sure. So we can help with the approach and trying to use our network to get at those answers. But our teams also work with student groups, such as PBG, such as the Wharton Snyder Center Venture Consulting Group, such as the Detkin IP Clinic, all of these groups that have wonderful student teams that can help us get at and answer these questions. So my recommendation for students who are interested in going down the entrepreneurial path is to get involved with these groups, right? Learn from them, learn from your peers, and then apply that to startups. And actually, I will mention, we're going to be launching our student volunteer internship program for across our portfolio. So if there are opportunities within our portfolio for internships, we welcome students to apply. This might be a way to get hands-on with one company in particular as well.
Bhavana, you also mentioned how having a CEO involved at this early stage would be really beneficial in doing that market outreach there. So can you speak to the dynamics then when the team is expanding and a CEO is brought in, and that CEO is not necessarily the student founder potentially? So how would that relationship evolve? How does the student founder play a role in recruiting that CEO?
So the team dynamics are such an important part of a startup. So there has to be this fit, honestly, between the founders and the CEO, because if that doesn't exist, one of the biggest reasons that a startup can fall apart is that the team doesn't get along. So you want to make sure that that's the right fit. And then it's an opportunity to look at it for as a learning opportunity for both sides, right? So the CEO is coming into this team not intimately knowing the technology or the development process. So they're learning from the student founder, and the student founder is learning from the CEO how to develop the strategy for the business. And so it's more of a collaboration, especially in an early stage company, than it is a hierarchy. I think there are, of course, decisions that are made by the CEO that will affect the company as a whole, but all of this remains an open discussion in the teams that I've seen that work well, right? So everyone understands what's happening, what the pros and cons are of certain decisions. And so I would want for a student who's coming into that situation where they're recruiting a CEO to think of it as a learning opportunity and not where they're necessarily being displaced. Because at this early point, it's so important to get all the resources and expertise that you can to understand what the business is and where the product will go, even before you're necessarily in manufacturing or working with CROs, right? There's so much upfront work that can be done within this team at that stage.
Shifting gears a little bit here. So what happens to startups at this early stage when they don't really take off, or if the team, the founders decide that maybe this is not something that they want to stick with? What happens then? Just thinking about, is there like a safety net here, or there's an exit route?
I will say within the space, there's this phrase that says fail fast, right? You want to understand if your company really has legs as quickly as possible, so you're not wasting time or money. What that usually comes down to is, does the technology have some sort of fatal flaw? Is there not really a market for this product? Or if the team, as you said, isn't really engaged, the startup is not going to move forward and will likely be dissolved because there isn't that, you need those critical components. In the end, I think that's better for everyone rather than dragging it out, but it doesn't mean the technology is dead. So what I mean by that is there are opportunities to either pivot it into another startup or another company if there are other applications and you haven't found the right fit for that technology and the problem that it's solving. That's usually one of the hardest things to do, is understand the problem and the technology fit. But beyond that, you can also license, right? So we have a fantastic licensing team at PCI. They can go out and look at external companies that may be interested in licensing the technology. It could get bundled potentially if you're looking at your technology and saying, is this enough? Could you bundle it with other assets and create a company around that? There's a number of different directions it can go if a startup doesn't take off by itself. But that's a process of everyone being okay with that outcome, right? Whether or not it fails or if it goes another direction.
So Bhavana, to close out, are there any final pieces of advice or maybe resource suggestions that you would have for students or trainees in this space who are interested in entrepreneurship generally?
I think it's great to be bold and be brave in this space. My one piece of advice is really talk to everyone that you know or can get connected to that are entrepreneurs themselves or maybe work at startups. It's not like startups necessarily can post on Indeed. Sometimes they can, but it's more often than not, it's knowing the community and understanding who you would want to work with to be able to find the right fit for you. So that's my advice on how to understand what you want and then how to achieve it. So I wish all of the students that are listening to this podcast the best of luck. And I'll also offer that if you ever want to chat, I'm very open to that as well.
Great. Thank you, Bhavana. It's been a pleasure.
Same. Thanks so much.
That's it for our discussion with Bhavana Mohanraj, Assistant Director at the Ventures Arm of Penn Center for Innovation. Bhavana helps spin-outs based on life science technologies here at Penn to form and launch their companies. We heard from her the considerations for understanding the market and for student founders at this early stage in spin-outs, and also the resources available at Penn to support spin-outs. We look forward to you returning to our next episode when we speak with Vivian Martin, a director within the PCI licensing group here at Penn. Vivian will be explaining intellectual property, licensing, and tech transfer.